Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, yo, yo.
What's going on, everybody? Go ahead. Nah, you go. You got.
What's up, everybody? It's Lee and Keys on this special Hump Day edition. You know, we got a lot to talk about tonight. But before we start, want to send our prayers out and dedicate tonight's show to Walt Harris and his family, as they received the bad news about his stepdaughter, Anaya Blanchard, as they found her remains last week. And, Walt, we're thinking about you. We're praying for you and your family, man. Take your time. And we understand, bro. Take care of your family, and God bless you. It's always sad when something like this happens, especially to guys or girls that's in the sport that we talk about every week or we cover or, you know, that we enjoy. And very sad. I had the opportunity to interview Walt Harris. It was earlier this year, and it was fun. He was a cool interview. It was quite easy. We talked about everything from MMA to college football to fantasy football to basketball. So, sending our condolences out to Walt Harris and his family.
Absolutely. I was following that story pretty closely as it was developing, and I know I think he was supposed to fight. He was supposed to have a fight, I want to say, with Overeem, but then I saw that. I respected it when he dropped out of the fight, you know, in search of his stepdaughter. So yeah, I can't imagine how that hurts. So I definitely feel for the guy, and I'm very sorry to hear about that news. It's tragic.
Yeah, it's tragic. So, yes, this show is dedicated to Walt Harris and his family, and another angel gone too soon, Miss Anaya Blanchard. So, all right, Keys, man. So, let's jump into it, man. We got that out the way. What's going on, bro?
So, I know you had something that you want to get off. You want to get that off first, or you want me to ask you what I want to ask you?
All right, you go ahead and ask me what you want to ask me, because I'm quite sure it did not bear to get it off.
All right, so it's probably not what you think I'm going to ask you. I actually just was reading this in an article not long ago, or a little bit earlier. And so next weekend is a big fight card. There's three title fights. And Jose Aldo is moving down from 145 to 135 to fight Marlon Moraes. And I don't know if you saw this, but MMA Mania, per MMA Mania, they are saying that Aldo is having a really hard time cutting down to 135, to the 135 limit. He is currently at 152 pounds, and the fight is next weekend. So he has to make the limit, I want to say, Thursday, maybe Friday. So he has 9 days, and he's at 150. He's at 152 pounds right now. And what they also said was that, this is not exact words because I don't have the article right in front of me right now, but it was something along the lines of that Aldo is eating around 2 pounds of salad per day to try and, you know, to really go into, he's almost really going into overdrive to try and cut the weight, because I'm sure his camp is a little worried at this point that they're running out of time. What do you think about that?
Okay. So he's been fighting at featherweight basically his entire career. So now he's going down to bantamweight, which if people that follow the sport know, he was having problems making 145 the older he got. So him going down to 135 made no sense to me. I thought he would have moved up to lightweight because I think lightweight is probably a better division for him as far as definitely money fights because of who's in the 155 division. But him going down to bantamweight was a shocker to me. I could see Frankie going down to, 135, but I could never see Aldo going down to 135. And him having problems making 135 is not a shocker to me because he was having problems making 145. Why his camp would even suggest him going down to 135 made no sense to me. The only thing I could see is him going down to 135 was maybe a quicker route to get another title shot. But even going down to 135, there is no quick shot at the title because you still got guys like Sanhagen, Garbrandt, Dominique Cruz. You got guys down there that's been Aljamain Sterling. You still got guys down there that's been, grinding it out for a title shot at 135 and Peter Yan. So I never understood why Aldo would do it, and this is the reason why I disagree with the move. I'm not shocked that he's having problems making 135. And I'm thinking probably next Friday, if he do make 135, I'm quite sure it's going to hinder his performance in the ring next Saturday. So I'm really worried about that, and we'll see how it turns out.
Well, I'm even worried about, how he's going to look if he does make the weight. I feel like he's going to be struggling to get those last couple of pounds if he gets – if doctors don't come in and say you can't cut any more weight, like, in this amount of time. Kind of like what happened to Max Holloway when he was trying to fight Khabib. And he took it on really short notice. I think it was like 8 days or even less than that. I think it was even less, maybe even like 6 days notice. And then he was trying to cut like a certain amount of weight and his camp was pushing for it and he was still going to keep going. And he already cut a lot of weight from where he started from. And then I think the doctors came in and they were like, nah, like you're not going to cut any more weight. Like you already don't look healthy with you don't even look healthy with where you are now. We don't want you to cut any more weight because, just God forbid. And that's the thing. You look at the weigh-ins Aspen Ladd had. If you look at the way Aspen Ladd's last weigh-in, she was shaking up there. That was like – that footage was disturbing to watch.
Yep.
Aspen Ladd's last weigh-in. She looked like she was going to fall over. I think she was going to fall over. If she didn't have – that flag to hold on to with, because they know you're changing to, a lot of fighters got to take off the shorts underneath so they can make the weight, if they're off by a pound or something, and they're holding up that flag, then the fighters end up holding on to the flag. If she didn't have that and then also have the two people standing next to her, I think she would have collapsed. I don't see how she would have been able to even stand up on her own at that point. If she didn't have anybody by her to catch her if she fall and without being able to hold on to that little flag. And that's not a knock to Aspen Ladd. I'm just saying it's kind of – I don't want to see situations like that. I don't think any of us want to see fighters in that condition just to make weight. It's I'm pretty sure they said Aspen Ladd, after that weigh-in, they said she's not allowed – to fight at bantamweight anymore. She has to move up to – it's in that state. I want to say was in New York or maybe California.
What they did was they put her on probation, and if she ever fights in California again, they're going to weigh her 30 days out, and then 20 days out, and then 10 days out. So she's kind of like on a probationary thing with them because of that situation. And that situation led to her getting knocked out, man, because I think she got knocked out. Then she loses Jermaine Durandamy. Yeah, she got
I think it was in the first round, too.
Yeah, it was in the first round. It was like under 2 minutes. So my whole thing is some of these guys and girls, they have to start taking their health into consideration. I know weight cut is a part of the game, and it gives you kind of sort of a competitive advantage. But when you're at a weigh-in and you look like you're about to faint, or your body has taken such a drastic change that you look like you haven't eaten in like 2 weeks, it's crazy. Look at what T.J. Dillashaw did. Just to make 135. He was taking a steroid to make 135 for a fight. Why? Just so you can be known as a champ and jeopardize your career. Now his career is in jeopardy, and he's going to be forever branded as a cheat. And I just don't see how he'll rebound. And I don't know why Jose Aldo's team encouraged him or supported him moving down to 135. That just makes no sense to me. Sometimes you have to look out for the fighter. You have to do the hard part and be the bad guy sometimes when you are the corner man, the manager, the agent, the trainer. Sometimes you have to be that guy to say, no, we need to do this. We need to reevaluate. I just think his team didn't do him, did him a disservice.
Well, he was moving down to 125. I know you meant to say 125 for the Cejudo fight.
No, it was 135. Oh, yeah, Dillashaw. My bad. Yeah, down to 125. Yeah, my bad.
Was he having trouble making 135 in the first place?
No, I think Dillashaw, 135 was never an issue with him making 135, but he had talked about moving up to 145. If you're talking about moving up to 145, why are you even looking at fighting at 125? That just makes no sense at all to me. You know what I'm saying? You're talking about going up a weight class, but then you're going to fight down a weight class? Nah, I just don't understand that.
Which is why I'm kind of surprised to see fighters moving down a weight class after seeing not only how TJ Dillashaw got stopped by Cejudo in, I think it was like 30 seconds when he moved down a weight class, because his body was so depleted that he was bound to get stopped. And the same case with Aspen Ladd, where she cut too much weight in a small amount of time, her body was depleted, and she got stopped again in the first round. So I'm surprised that there's this wave of fighters moving down in weight after seeing both of those incidents in the same year, where fighters did not look at all like themselves because of the weight cut that they did.
Yeah, man, it's dangerous, man. It's really, really dangerous. And the rehydration part is dangerous also. I don't know if you read the article that I wrote on weight cut, but it was very informative. And that's why you see more fighters nowadays fighting closer to their walk-around weight, because it's healthier. And plus, I think a lot of the athletic commissions are going to go the route of California, and they're not going to let you rehydrate more than 10% of what you weighed in at. So weight cut is going to have to become a little bit more strategic, and people are going to have to be a little bit more careful.
Yeah, and I like the fact that, by the way, I did read that article. You put that out a couple of months ago, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and you put that out, and after you put it out, I remember, I think the Aspen Ladd fight was shortly after you put it out. And then it was like, when you wrote, what you said, we had like a pure example of what you were trying to say shortly after when Aspen Ladd fought Durandamy. And then the show that we had after that, I said, it's almost like you say these things, and then later down the line, we see a perfect example of what you would kind of warn people about. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's unfortunate that it has to go to that point for fighters to, or for fans or anybody or commissions to realize that the weight cut is inflicting too much damage on fighters' bodies. You have to see, you know, they look like the fighters look like they're going to collapse at weigh-ins. It's kind of sad that you have to wait till that point, or that, you know, people don't realize it earlier on, that maybe, you know, like Darren Till, that maybe Darren Till didn't need to fight at 170 pounds when the guy walks around at like 215. There's no need to cut that much weight. Like, you should be fighting in a bigger division than 170 pounds. There's no need. And then, right. And yeah. And now he's at middleweight. And I would say he looked pretty good in his last fight. It wasn't the most exciting fight, but I think he looked good though. And a big thing to point out is that he really didn't take much damage. He barely even got hit in the fight. And do we know if his chin is, you know, where it was? No, we don't really know, because he really didn't get hit. I didn't see him really get hit with one. I didn't see Kelvin Gastelum land one big shot on Darren Till in the fight to tell me whether or not that Darren Till's chin is where it was when he was just, you know, on that losing streak at 170. You know, he did get finished by Woodley. That was a submission, but the way he got stopped by Masvidal, you know, you didn't see that from him when he was coming up. You know, he had this Stephen Thompson fight. He had the Cerrone fight. You know, his chin held up. He took some shots in those fights, and his chin held up. Then Masvidal knocked him out. So it seemed like he might have been having a hard time. But I think the whole time the weight cut was too much, and he was way too big of a guy to be fighting at 170 pounds. So those are just the type of situations where it doesn't make sense. You know, for a guy like Woodley, though, Woodley's kind of small. Like, he's like a small tank, you know? But Darren Till is a really big dude for 170. He was always big. Guys like, I'm not sure what Woodley walked around at, but, you know, I'm getting a little off topic. Yeah, Let me get it together. Okay. So the next thing that I wanted to ask you about, and this was in perfect timing for us to get on here for our show tonight, because it just came out today. Your boy, your favorite fighter in the UFC, you are so proud that he is not retired yet. You know what I'm going to say?
It better not be Diego Sanchez.
So you must have not seen the news. Your boy Diego Sanchez is coming back for another fight. And he's fighting that dude who does the flips in the octagon.
The guy that was running around looking all crazy, and then he ended up getting knocked out, or he ended up losing?
Yeah, he was his first fight. He was bouncing off the cage, and he was doing like kicks off the cage and punches, flying punches off the cage and backflips. His name is Mitchell, I think Mitchell or Michelle Pereira.
Yeah. Okay.
He really wasn't that much of a prospect. When you look at him, he's really not that he's not really a dangerous fighter if you really look at it. He didn't even really have an impressive record. I feel like the UFC just brought him in because of his theatrics in the ring, and they saw that as good marketing. Oh, we can market a guy like this because people will say, oh, who's that fighter that did a backflip during a fight? And what did people do? They came out and they said, who's this fighter that did a backflip in the octagon? And then a lot of people tuned in to watch his fight. See, that's smart marketing, smart business move from the UFC. But the guy really isn't that great of a fighter. He came in and won his first fight, his debut in the UFC. I think he got a knockout or something like that. People were impressed. But then he lost his second fight, and he didn't even look good in that second fight. So he's already been exposed. He just does the theatrics. He's really not that great. So Diego Sanchez, I mean, I don't know what to expect from that fight. I don't really know, because the guy just flips around like a ninja.
Yeah, man, I really don't know how I feel about this fight either. Because basically it's two guys that I really could care less to see fight. So I guess if I had to go the lesser two evils, I would probably root for Ferreira, because I think Diego Sanchez shouldn't be out there fighting anymore. I think he's taking too many shots. I think he's well past his prime. Now, the funny part is this. I'm going to say that, and then he's going to go out there and knock out Ferreira, and then he's going to call out somebody at the end of the fight, and he's going to keep on fighting. So I really don't know why the UFC keeps throwing him out there, but, hey, I hope it plays out like this, and it'll be so funny. Ferreira goes to do one of them crazy flips, and Diego catches him with an uppercut and knocks him out on the contact.
Man, that'd be hilarious.
Yeah, it would be. Man, that would be funny. Yeah, man, I'm just shocked that Diego's still doing it. But, you know, man, I, as fans or, as people outside the sport, who are we to tell a guy when to quit? But our eyes sometimes tell us that somebody should quit. And my eyes have told me at least 3 or 4 fights ago that he should quit.
Now, this is another thing that has to do with, weight cutting. But it's being done in the right way, where a guy is moving up when he's been having trouble at 145. Now, I was waiting to get – I actually tagged you in this on Twitter, and I forget if you responded to it. I don't think you saw it in time, but I tagged you in it on Twitter because I was interested to see what you think about this. So Moicano he was on a losing streak. I want to say he was on a 2-fight losing streak. He got knocked out in his last fight. I want to say he fought the Korean Zombie in his last fight and he got knocked out. And the fight before that he lost too. And now he's moving up to lightweight. And we were just saying this on our show last week that an issue that a lot of guys have been having, especially guys that have been moving up to 185 lately, is that going up and taking on top 5 opponents to try and rush their way to a fight with John Jones, and then they're getting crushed by top opponents. We saw Weidman get crushed. Rockhold got crushed. Now, given those guys have no chin, we saw Jacare look very underwhelming in his loss to Blachowicz. So guys are moving up and fighting top guys, and they're losing. But Moicano's moving up, and he called out Clay Guida for his lightweight debut. Now, this is another guy that I think you have a bone to pick with him still fighting, because it's been a while for Clay Guida in the UFC. But the one good move about it is that McConnell did not move up and try to fight like a Justin Gaethje or somebody like that, who you would expect him to, with the recent trends of people moving up.
Actually, I like that idea of McConnell. I think he probably has looked at, I bet him and his team, me and you weren't there, but I venture to go out and say him and his team probably sat down, watched videos of his fight, and probably came up with the idea of when you're in the octagon, they probably ask him, when you're in the octagon, how is your body reacting? And he probably told him, you know, I think that fighting at this weight class probably isn't the best of me, you know, is affecting my body and my performance. And then they made the best decision for him to move up. And I think him moving up and not trying to get a top-10 guy off the bat is a smart move. And I applaud him for doing that. Calling off somebody like Clay Guida, you know, I think his better days are behind him, but he's still a name in the game. But one thing about Guida is McConnell better work on his cardio, because Clay Guida still moves around at 185 miles per hour inside the octagon. So if his cardio ain't right, Clay Guida will wear him down. But I do like the fact that McConnell probably sat back and analyzed what he's been doing here lately, with probably within his last couple fights, and came up with the best suggestion, the best solution for him was to move up in weight. And like you said, a lot of these guys moving up from 185 to 205, that's a 20-pound difference. Most weight classes are 10-pound difference. That extra 20 pounds is a big difference, man, especially when you haven't fought at that weight. I mean, you might have walked around or worked out of that weight, but not being in the octagon and a real fight at that weight is a totally different thing. And the guys that you are fighting, especially if you're going in there fighting a top 5 or top 10 guy, guess what? That means they've been putting work in that division for a while, and they are experienced at fighting that weight. But I like what McConnell did. I like the way his approach to doing it, his approach to not going in there trying to a top 5 guy. I don't know whether or not you saw this, but Amir Latifi is moving up to heavyweight. His first fight at heavyweight is against Derry Lewis. It's like, bro, you coming up from light heavyweight to heavyweight, and your first fight is against a top 5 heavyweight? That makes no sense to me.
And a guy that we don't really know if he can take a shot from.
So, I think the UFC can help these guys out too, Keys. Sometimes you have to look out for your assets. Your assets are your fighters. And I think, like, throwing Latifi in there against Lewis, I don't think that's a good move for Latifi. And us as fans, we know that's not a good move. So why not get him, like, a friend's top 15 guy? Get him maybe the guy that lost to Greg Hardy, Juan Adams or something like that. Why would you get him Derek Lewis? I just don't understand that move. So the UFC, you know, maybe they could have did better by him moving up the heavyweight by not rushing him into a top 5 fight.
Now, I'll say this. I wouldn't want to be a guy that has to stand in front of Derek Lewis. Now, when I watch his fights, a lot of times I criticize Derek Lewis because, A, I feel like he could be
cardio.
In much better shape. Yes, his cardio, but I feel like he doesn't work hard enough on his cardio, and also his diet. He could help his cardio by being on a better diet, because he will get more fit, and he will be able to last longer. He won't be tired. but he, I don't think he really does much. I don't think he really has a diet. I don't think he really does the whole nutritionist thing like some of these fighters do. At least from what I've heard him say, he's eating fried chicken and stuff like that, like the day before the fight. That's what I've heard him say. So in interviews and stuff like that. But, and on, you know, UFC, you know, those episodes they usually do leading up to a fight. So
yeah, countdown.
I've heard him say, yeah, UFC countdown. Like, I'm pretty sure I've seen one of those with him before, and he was talking about some of the food that he eats. And I don't think he really care, he really focuses much on his diet. I can say that. So, he fights so flat-footed. He doesn't really have any footwork. Like, he just comes forward, and he doesn't switch stance. He stays in the same stance. I don't understand it. I mean, I'm not a boxer, but just looking at it, even from my amateur perspective, I can see things that I imagine him changing that would improve his game. If he switched stance during the fight, that would improve his game, in my opinion. But he pretty much keeps the same stance, and he comes forward flat-footed, you know, with the same pace. He doesn't change pace really either. The only time he really changes pace is you saw it in the fight with Junior Dos Santos when I think he was against the cage, and he got a shot to the stomach. And I know he had that procedure, so when he gets shots to the stomach, he goes down, and that's how he lost that fight. He can't take the shots to the body, and you've seen how he kind of sprawls out of it and just goes on a rampage. All of a sudden, you see him really pick up the pace. He has those spurts of energy that he comes out with. You know, Derek Lewis, he did it in his last fight too. When he fought, I forget the guy's name that he fought. I really don't know. But in that fight, you saw it too. He comes out with these random spurts of energy at times. But he could be doing that more. But if he – Derek Lewis, man, he just kills me. Cause regardless of all the things, I wouldn't want to stand in front of him because we know he can knock out anybody. So I wouldn't want to take a punch from him. I don't think Latifi wants to take a punch from him either. But he's going up there to be a sacrificial lamb. That's what I think is happening.
Yeah, I just don't like the matchup. I just think there's so many other ways they could have introduced him to the heavyweight division. I mean, even if you gave him a fight against Grant Hardy, you know, maybe that could have been something they could have did. You know, but I just don't like them sending a guy up. A guy moving up in weight class and fighting a top five guy that's already established in the weight class. You know, like Wyman who did Wyman just lose to? Blachowicz. He lost to him, a top five, you know, and then Jacare lost to, you know, a top five, top ten guy. And then, you know, you just don't do the guy any. You're doing the guy a disservice, the guy or girl a disservice. Because basically what happens is they probably moving up a division because they're probably on a loser streak. So basically they're trying to regain some confidence. So you moving them up and they're having them fight a top five or a top ten guy. Guess what? The loser streak adds another fight to it because they're not going to beat an established top five guy unless they get lucky and catch him with a shot or, you know, a slick submission or something like that. But what's the chance of that happening? So I think the UFC could look out for the fighters also.
Now, I don't want to dive too deep into that right now. Because I know there was something that you wanted to get off your chest, so I think now's the perfect time.
Okay. There is a false narrative out there about myself. This false narrative is that I am a Conor McGregor hater. That is so far from true. You know, I don't agree with everything the guy has done. I definitely don't like his antics. I have said that, you know, after he fought Floyd Mayweather, that he has his intention was to be more of a celebrity than a fighter, which has basically been true. I never agreed with his antics, you know, for his trash talk, you know, stuff like that. My main issue with Mr. McGregor, and my man Keys can back me up on this, is I always put him down for sometimes going over the top with his trash talk. And I have never forgiven him for the bus incident. And I have never forgiven the UFC for allowing him to get away with the bus incident. When you don't discipline somebody and you enable them, guess what? Their behavior becomes worse. And my point about this was because if it was any other fighter, would they have been suspended? Would they have been fined? Would they have been disciplined? I would say yes. And the reason he wasn't is because the UFC bends over backwards for him, and they've seen and they turn another cheek with all his antics. And that was my biggest issue with Mr. McGregor. My other issue is Jameson tastes better than Proper 12, but that's neither here nor there. But I just want to let people know, that I'm not a Conor McGregor hater. I do not like his antics pre-fight. I don't like what he did with the bus incident. And it's just certain things about him that I don't like. Now, he is a draw in the UFC. I can't knock that. I'll be lying if I said, oh, Conor McGregor is not a draw. The UFC don't need him. The UFC basically telling you that they need him when they're jumping over backwards to create a card on January 18th that wasn't even on the calendar. And me and you talked about this a few weeks back. I said, Conor, number one, either he's blowing smoke about this January 18th or he put the UFC in a hard spot. And lo and behold, he basically put the UFC in a hard spot. And that's the thing I wanted to get off my chest and clarify this false narrative about me. I am not a Conor McGregor hater. There's just certain things about the guy I don't like. And people say that about me. It's probably certain things about me they don't like. And nobody is going to like everything about a person. People that's married, there's something about their spouse they don't like. So I just wanted to clear that up, get that off my chest, and thank you for allowing me to do that.
So my thing is with that is that I didn't understand when you said that basically you insinuated that McGregor is ducking a fight with Justin Gaethje. And a lot of people are saying that, and I don't understand why that is becoming a narrative itself. And to
me, I think the narrative behind that is what Gaethje said, though, Keys. Gaethje said he was offered a fight with Conor McGregor in July, and everything was in the works with the UFC, and Conor backed out of the fight. And then the UFC never came out and disputed what Gaethje said. So when it came out that January 18th that Conor will be fighting, I think a lot of people latched back on to what Gaethje had said at the end of the Cerrone fight that he was offered a Conor fight. So I think a lot of people jumped on that narrative. But my thing has been the whole time is the UFC is protecting Conor with this Cerrone fight because basically he should beat Cerrone. Because Cerrone, I don't think Cerrone going to fight a smart fight. I think he's going to try to stand and bang with Conor, and lo and behold, he's going to get knocked out. I don't think it's going to go to the scorecard. So I don't think Cerrone is going to use all the tools in his toolbox. I think he's going to play to what the crowd wants to see, and that's Conor you know, in a trade war, and I don't think that's going to work out for Cerrone. He might prove me wrong, but I doubt it. But I think the thing is what you originally said that actually, you did say this. You said Conor versus Gaethje would be a better fight. And I said that I think Gaethje would do, he would go in there and he would stand and bang with Conor and Conor would knock him out. But after seeing what Gaethje has done in his past couple fights, I see why the UFC gave him Cerrone, because they don't want to take a chance of Conor getting knocked out by Gaethje. Even though Gaethje doesn't play any defense, he's not a defensive fighter. He will take punches, but he will trade also. And I think that's the why people jumped on the narrative that the Gaethje fight. And I'm mad that Conor took the Cowboy fight versus the Gaethje fight because of what Gaethje said after he finished Cowboy. And plus, Cowboy's coming off two losses.
Well, the funny part about it is on October 7th, 2018, we had a show, and you asked me who I thought Conor McGregor should fight next. And I said Gaethje. And you laughed and said that I said that because I knew it was an easy fight for Conor. But now you have got on the train of saying that that's the not easy, that would be the dangerous fight, and that Cerrone is the easy fight. I think they're both an easy fight for Conor.
You think if Cerrone was to use all his tools in his toolbox, that Conor would beat him still?
I'm saying yes. So I think there'd still be a likelihood that Conor would beat him still. But if, you know, I do understand that if it were to go Cerrone's way, I could see Cerrone submitting Conor. But people, when you're talking about some of these other tools that he has, like those head kicks, like Cerrone, the way Cerrone knocked out Matt Brown in the Matt Brown fight, someone reposted that on Twitter yesterday, and they were saying, imagine if Cerrone does this to McGregor. You are out of your mind if you think that McGregor is going to get caught with a head kick from Donald Cerrone. Okay, this is not, you know, I just, it gets to a point of ridiculousness to where I just feel like people just like say things because they don't like Conor, not because they're thinking of something logically. It's like the same people that say, like, a lot of people that don't like Floyd Mayweather, they say he's not good because they don't like him, not because he's not skilled. Like, they know he's skilled, but they say he's not a good boxer because they don't like him. But that's not, you know, that you're using your heart and not logic. He's a great boxer, but you cannot like him while admitting that he's a great boxer. See, that's, but with Conor now, he's done so much, you know, with the rape allegations and a lot of these things. He, you know, had the altercation with the gentleman in the bar and, you know, smacking the phone out of the guy's hand. I understand he's done enough things to make people dislike him, but I just don't agree with people saying that he's going to lose to everybody now because they don't like him. Because and that's just not true. Like they can say, you know, people can believe that, but just wait until he fights the guys that you're talking about and they get knocked out or they lose on points or something happens and then you understand that. It's, you know, I've bet with my heart many times and was wrong many times. Betting with your heart is not a good thing to do. This logic has to play a factor too.
My thing is, okay, outside of Gaethje and Cerrone, which are the top five guys in that division, do you really think he can beat those? I mean, hold on, they're fighting at 170, right?
Yeah, fighting at 170.
Okay, at 170, who do you really think he could beat at 170? I mean, what you got, Usman, Covington, Masvidal, Leon Edwards, your boy Woodley. I mean, outside of Gaethje and Cowboy, I don't see – I mean, see, I think Woodley, if Woodley was motivated enough, he would get Conor a fight. But you never know what Woodley you're going to get. I think Usman wrestling would negate Conor. I think Covington keeps a nice pace, and he does a lot of wrestling too. I think Masvidal's power and his coming forward pressure. I think Leon Edwards with his length and his elbows, baby. You know, but I just don't see why they will fight at 170. I just don't see the reason behind it. But I know the reason behind it is because they're setting us up for after he beats Cowboy Cerrone, he probably calls out Masvidal, and then they got this big build-up for Conor versus Masvidal, whatever, probably International Fight Week. So I see why they're doing it at 170. But his previous fights at 170, where he lost 1-1-1, and then the first one he got tapped out. So I don't know, man. I just think Conor calls the shots when it comes to his fights, and the UFC just goes with it.
Well, so back to what you were saying is that I honestly think if and this is not this is not because be, all right, so understand is that when I was saying that you have to factor in the logic of it and not just your dislike. So in the adverse, you could also say I have to factor in the logic of it and not my like of Conor. So not saying he can beat all these guys because I'm a fan. So I understand there's guys that I would have serious doubts that he would be able to beat. Like I wouldn't bet on Conor versus Covington or Usman. I wouldn't even want to see him fight them because, you know, Covington can fight for like 2 hours. Right, so Covington can fight for like 2 hours straight. You know, he probably has the best cardio in the UFC right now, debatably the best cardio in the UFC. So Conor will be exhausted, you know, and he has unbelievable wrestling. He'll probably get smothered. Usman will smother him. You know, we saw what he did to Woodley. I wouldn't bet on Conor versus either of those two guys. But and Leon Edwards, honestly, I've never seen him fight a day in my life, so I really don't even know. And I'm not going to make an uneducated opinion on Conor fighting a guy that I don't even know. I never even seen Leon Edwards fight, so I don't even know what he has to offer. A lot of people say he's good. I've never seen him fight before, so I'm not going to call that one. I just don't know. I'm not going to call it when I've never seen a guy fight. Woodley, I feel like, could beat Conor if he were to utilize his ground game. I mean, if Woodley stands there, he has power, but I feel like a Conor fight would motivate Woodley to be more on the offense. But then at the same time, like I always say, the mental warfare, I feel like McGregor would get in Woodley's head at the press conference, and Woodley would probably overextend and get caught coming in. Not in the very beginning, but probably like third round or something like that. You know, he might throw the right hand and Conor catches him with an uppercut or something like that. I could just picture that happening. But Woodley could beat him if he utilized the ground game. And you know, Woodley's my favorite, so I think each of them could beat each other, but in their own way. And then Masvidal, I like McGregor's chances against Masvidal. I mean, Masvidal is good boxing, but I do like McGregor's chances against him. And then I don't know, Ponzinibbio. I mean, I would give McGregor a chance against Ponzinibbio. I'd give him a chance against Lawler. I'd give him a chance against RDA. Because I think all those guys would just stand and bang with him. And when you do that, I think McGregor always has a chance if anyone's going to stand and bang with him. Now, their power, outpowering his power, that factor is there. I don't know. We'd have to just see. But I do give him a chance for all three of those guys, with no doubt. And then the 155, I think he could beat Poirier. I think he could beat Gaethje. I think he could beat James Vick. I think he could beat Barboza. You know, he might have some trouble with, you know, all the kicks that Barboza throws to the body. That might, you know, I can see that being a tough one. He might have to drag Barboza into, like, the later round to get him out of there. But I do think he can beat Barboza. Who else is there off the top of my head? I mean, the two guys that I wouldn't bet on Conor and I would just watch the fight would have to be Ferguson and Khabib, because I don't know. I just don't know, because they're really good guys. I'm not saying that he can beat them. Of course, I'd root for him, but I'm not saying with much confidence that he could beat those two guys. But the rest of these guys, I give Conor a shot against the rest of these 155 guys. You know, Kevin Lee, I feel like he could beat Kevin Lee. I don't know. I can't remember all of them off top, but most of the top five guys, I think he could beat, besides Ferguson and Khabib. Most of the top 10, actually. Hooker, I think he would drop Hooker in probably a round, maybe two rounds. He'd get Hooker out of there. Felder, too. I think he'd get Felder out of there probably by the second or third round. Felder's a bit more, I think Felder's a bit more crafty than Dan Hooker. So Hooker just kind of stands there and take shots, and that's, can't do that versus Conor. So, but Felder, yeah. So nah, that's not, like I said, when I say you can't factor in people factoring in their dislike into logic, and right there, I'm not putting my like into the logic. I was being honest with guys. I felt like I wouldn't bet on him to beat them, like Usman, Covington, Ferguson, Khabib. I'm not saying he could beat them. I don't know that he can beat them. I root for him, but I don't know that he can beat them. The rest of those guys, I said I give him I would believe that he could beat them.
But the thing is I understand what you're saying, but then I want to say, I will say we're UFC pundits, is that when you can't, in your position or our position doing this show, we have to be objective and we have to be basically critical sometimes. And when we make an opinion or, I ain't saying an opinion, and we breaking down a fight, we have to do it as if we are representing the UFC and MMA community. So sometimes, well, not sometimes, we have to put our personal feelings to the side and go with what our eyes tell us and what we know about the game. And when you was naming them guys in the lightweight division, the guys that he could beat, I was sitting there thinking that, okay, I agree with that. He probably could, you know, I think the two guys that he probably wouldn't be that lightweight is probably Ferguson and Khabib. I just think those two are just, Khabib already beat him. And I just think Tony does so many things in the ring that so unorthodox and weird that I think it would probably catch Conor off guard. But one thing about Tony is willing to stand and bang with you sometimes. And that could be a negative thing when you're fighting Conor McGregor. I think Tony would probably get suckered into that if he was to ever fight Conor. And that would be his downfall instead of doing what he do. Poirier, we know he already beat him. So I really wasn't ever thinking about that. But him fighting that 170 opens a lot of doors. and I'm kind of with you. Once you get past Woodley, I don't see him even entertaining fights against RDA, you know, guys like that, Hooker. I don't see him entertaining fights for guys like that because they're really not names. So, nah, I just don't see it happening. Ponzinibbio, I don't see that happening. Hooker, no. Felder, no. I think the original guys that we named, you know, Woodley, Edwards, Masvidal, guys like that will be names he'll be looking to fight. So, but the crazy part is this January 18th card, there is no update on ESPN.com or anything really acknowledging this card right now.
Wait, so hold on. So I don't understand. So you were saying that so we're on this show, we have to be objective. So what you're saying, we have to be, hold on. I get confused with the meanings of subjective and objective.
What I'm saying is, when you said, you know, you like Carter, and sometimes, you know, you have to step back and judge him not based on you liking him. So basically, you have to be objective with your opinion on him instead of basing your opinion on whether or not you like him or not. That's what being objective means.
Yeah. So I get confused the meanings of those two words all the time. But I felt like that's what I was doing right there when I just went through those guys.
I wasn't reading
and listening. I was just going off the top with 155ers and 170ers that came to mind. I'm not saying like, oh, he would fight all those guys, but you know, I know they're not names, but it's just the guys that came to mind, and I was just being realistic with the actual matchup. You know, I do think at 170,
yeah,
a lot of the guys are pretty big, so I understand why Dana White said Masvidal might be too big for him. I can understand because I don't think McGregor is a true 170. I think he's a true 155. I think that's the perfect size for him. That's the healthiest weight for him, in my opinion. That's why I'm not really a fan of the fact that the Cerrone fight is at 170. I feel like he's at a size disadvantage, even though I think he can still beat Cerrone at 170.
But Keys, now that he's not fought since the Khabib fight, and he does a lot of marketing and other stuff, and getting in trouble in between that, I think his walk-around weight has went up, and that if he could make 155, I would be shocked. I know he can't make 145, but if he could make 155, I'd be shocked. So I'm thinking the maturation of his career has basically sped up, been to his inactivity, and now he's a 170er, man.
That's actually that's a reasonable point. I could believe that. Maybe he just didn't stay in shape, and now he just can't get the weight down, or just doesn't want to get the weight down. But like I was saying though, is that I was being truthful in those four guys. I wouldn't go out and tell somebody McGregor's going to beat Colby Covington or Usman or Khabib. I rooted for him versus Khabib, but when I was watching the fight, though, at my house, I ordered the pay-per-view, and, you know, a couple of my friends came over, and, you know, he was betting on the fight, and he asked me what I thought of it objectively, and I told him that this was a very iffy fight, and I really wasn't that confident in McGregor winning it. I told him that, but I said I'm rooting for him, and I believe in him to win, but I don't know. I'm not going to tell you to bet on him or say with confidence that he's going to win. I don't know. This is a tough fight. That's what I said, because I root for him, but I want him to win, so I have that belief, and I'm going to promote him winning. Say Conor is going to win, but saying, you know, if you go tail the tape and look at the game tapes, you know, I used to do the keys to victory articles on the scrap. If anybody ever seen my keys to victory articles, I used to watch back footage of each individual that I was talking about last couple of fights or some of their older fights or fights that I felt like were relevant to add pieces about into the article. And I wouldn't be able to go back and justify Conor winning in these fights that I'm saying. I wouldn't be able to justify how he would beat these guys. So that's what I'm saying. So I believe in him to beat most of these guys. I think he'd be outsized by most of the welterweights that he fights. If he goes up there, he's going to be outsized by almost all of them because I don't think he's a true 170er. Maybe now he is, but before, as of when I last saw him fight, I thought he was best suited at 155. He'll be outsized by all these guys, but I do give him a chance versus the RDAs, versus the Lawler, the Ponzinibbio, you know, all these 170s. I never saw Edwards fight, so I'm not going to talk about that. But then the Usman and Covington, their wrestling pedigree is too much. I don't think he'd be able to have he wouldn't have an answer for it. He'd have a puncher's chance, and that's it. And we know that when a guy only has a puncher's chance, he only has a puncher's chance. And that's very slim to say you can just win off a puncher's chance. The guy with more weapons is most going to win most of the time. So that's my stance there.
Yeah, I mean, and I totally agree. I think it's just so hard right now because we haven't seen him fight in so long, and then his last fight he was totally dominated and was tapped out, and you know it's just tough. When a guy with a name like his has been so inactive and he's one of the biggest draws in the UFC, but at the same time is, you know, has he really been training? Is he really motivated? You know, we really don't know all that. So basically the only thing we can do is we can go off of past performance and hope. We hope that he's going to be better than he was in the Khabib fight. We hope that he comes back and be as dominant as he was when he fought Jose Aldo. We hope that if he beats Cowboy Cerrone, that he stays active. We hope that after the Cowboy fight that he doesn't get in trouble and that his legal woes tend to calm down and he becomes more focused on being a fighter instead of celebrity. So there's a lot of hopes in there for, you know, MMA fans, Conor fans, you know. And when you're using a lot of hope, then basically you got to set the bar real low.
Yeah. No, that is true. It's, you know, I would be disappointed if he didn't look, as a fan, I'm expecting him to look really good, even though with everything, you know, it's been hard to be a fan lately, I'm still expecting to see him in really good shape and put on a really good performance. I would be extremely disappointed if he looked sluggish in the fight. If he looked like that he hasn't been putting in the work training the way that he's advertised it, because lately he's been posting a lot of pictures in training, you know, with guys sparring, you know, he's with, you know, guys emulating a certain size, you know, to strike with, you know, how they do try to spar with a guy that's the same size as the guy you're going to fight. So he's been posting pictures like that. And then, you know, the conditioning regimen that he does with, you know, he's riding bikes, you know, doing the Tour de France with the team. You know, I'm just hoping that this type of content that he posts translates to the octagon. Because as a fan, I don't want to have to deal with my own disappointment if he looks sluggish in there and he looks like that he hasn't been doing the right thing on the other side of it. Because I know, you know, ever since the Mayweather fight, you know, being, it's like he went Hollywood and, you know, he's out there with, you know, actresses and stuff like that and wasting time. You should be putting in work. You should be working on your craft, and you're out there, you know, probably getting wasted at parties in Vegas, you know, with millionaires, and it's killing your game. So, you know, I stress that he's still doing that and going out to clubs and, you know, and when he gets in situations, you know, slapping phones out of people's hands, that just makes me think, you know, dude is out there partying and stuff, you know, probably all hours of the morning. And that's not helping the game either. Probably just got to get a good night rest. But, oh, my God, you know, it's.
But man, you did use the word hope, though. You said you hope that he's doing this. I can't remember what you actually said, but you said, I hope. So, once again, we're hoping that this goes well or that it ends up pans out to a good outcome. We'll see, man. You know, Conor is a big draw. He's a big star. He's kind of a celebrity now. We'll see, man, whether or not he's a celebrity that's fighting or a fighter that's fighting. And I think we'd better tell that by what his body looks like and what he looks like inside the cage. You know, after he lost Khabib, you know, he said he was injured, that he had did something to his body or something. And, you know, some people say that's an excuse. Some people will say that's the reason why his performance was so bad. But me, myself, personally, a fight of that magnitude and you don't go in at 110%, then why go in if you can't give it your all? And that's just me. Because when you go into that, when they lock that cage, there's a possibility that you could get seriously injured and maybe even die in the octagon. So if you less than 110%, less than 100%, then you put your life at stake. And I just don't understand why guys would do that. I know the money, some of them need the money or whatever, but at the same time, your life is worth more than that. And if you're not good, don't go in there. And I hated that after that fight, he kind of used that as an excuse. And it just seems to, like, take some steam away from him. But I just want Conor, man, if he's going to be a fighter, man. And that's my main thing, you know, because the UFC is going to back him every turn. And I think if they're going to back him every turn, then let's get your career back on track. Let's see you in the octagon two or three times a year. And then your fans will actually take you seriously again. I'm not a fan, but I'm a fan of the UFC. So, you know, we'll see what happens with Conor, man.
Yeah, that spawns a whole new conversation because while you were saying that, I was thinking about the fights that I would actually want to see him in, and they're not even in the welterweight division. I really want to see him rematch Max Holloway. You know, I feel like that fight is there to be made, and not who wouldn't want to see that fight? Who wouldn't want to see that fight? What? Are y'all kidding me? I'm going to tell you they wouldn't want to see that fight.
Actually, I'm on board with that fight. I think I would be – if they would announce, let's just say, hypothetically, Max was a fight in on December 14th, and they would have said January 18th, we got the lightweight champion Max Holloway taking on Conor McGregor. I probably would have been super stoked for that fight because of how far Max has come since their first fight, and how Max seems to he seems to be dominant in the 155 division. He didn't look good against Poirier. Yeah, 145, my bad. He seems to be dominant at 145, whereas going against Poirier, he didn't look as sharp, even though I think there was some other things going on behind the scenes with that fight. I think he was like the last – he was maybe the fourth phone call for that fight, because I really think they wanted Ferguson and Poirier. But if I was Ferguson, no, I should be fighting for the belt. So I think they probably called a couple guys before they called Max, and Max decided to take the fight. But I'm with you. Man, I would be all on board for a Conor versus Holloway fight.
Well, I think, I don't know if, Holloway said the fights were still there, you know, at 155. Because after he lost to Poirier, they asked him if he felt like he still had some kind of future at 155. He said he felt like he's still right there and that he's also still right in the mix, you know, with the top five guys. So he could, you know, that's basically saying he feels like a fight with a top five guy is open for him, even coming off a loss and then going back down to 145. So I don't know. I mean, and maybe he, makes some adjustments and is able to get up to 155. I mean, the fight coming up next week is very, and this is me hoping again, because I really don't know if this fight could be made, because Conor is going to want to fight at 170, which I really am not interested in. I'd rather see him fight 155, but next week we'll be telling about this, because Holloway hasn't lost at 145 in years. I don't know. His streak is really long. I want to say he's on like a 12-fight win streak at 145, maybe even a 13-fight win streak. It's in the double digits. And
I
want to say if he
– I think him and Ferguson
yeah.
have the same streak.
And he's defended the title, I want to say, three, maybe four times at this point. He's – a four-time champion. I want to say he's defended the title three times, which is more than most guys can say, unless you're John Jones or Demetrius Johnson. Most people don't defend any belt three times. Or my boy Woodley. Most people don't defend the belt three times, but, you know, besides those honorable mentions. But, you know, if he were to win versus Volkanovski, that's his fourth title defense. Really, what else do you have to prove in the featherweight division? Does he need to still keep fighting these guys? Or, you know, maybe he's not interested and move up to 155 and, you know, take, like he said, he's still in the mix. Like, those fights are still there. He could still go and, fight Justin Gaethje or fight Conor or fight Ferguson. I wanted to see the Ferguson fight. You know, if Ferguson loses to Khabib, you know, maybe that fight is there. And then in the reverse, if he loses to Volkanovski, then do you think he still goes to – maybe he could still go to 155. Maybe he's just like, no rematch. I don't – you know, I'm done. No 145.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think his move to 155 is inevitable, because I think the big money fights for him now is a weight class up. So, when he beat Volkanovski, I could possibly see him going up to 155 and maybe fighting, I want to say Poirier. I don't know, man. I would have to see. But I just don't think his – I think his times, his days at 145 are numbered, and I think he knows that as well. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if sometime in 2020 or early 2021, early 2021 that he moves up. I think right now he's still a fairly young guy, and he could control his weight as far as how much he gains, how much he has to lose. But the older you get, the harder that gets. So I'm kind of with you. I think his future is at the next weight class, and I think there are better fights for him at the next class too.
Because And I was just doing a little bit of research right here, right now, and they said he made. Wait a second. There's no way that's correct. Okay, nah, that can't be right. So they said he made slightly more for his fight with Frankie Edgar, which was his last fight. He made. They said reportedly he made $390,000 for his title fight with Frankie Edgar. And then they said he made reportedly $350,000 for his lightweight fight with Dustin Poirier, which I mean, $350,000, $390,000. I mean, they're in the same range. They're still in the same area. I'm trying to figure out for his fight with Ortega what he got, but I mean, the money is definitely there. There's a lot of big money fights. Okay, so it's saying that Holloway got paid $100,000 for his fight with Brian Ortega. Yeah, so I might have to fact check that. I'm not sure, but that does seem kind of low. That's like Bellator money. If you look at the Bellator fight, they had Chuck Congo and Ryan Bader. I looked up the fight prices, and both them guys, Ryan Bader and Chuck Congo, both got paid $100,000 each for a heavyweight title. And it's not even that it's a heavyweight, but Bader, isn't he also the lightweight champion, light heavyweight champion? Like, that's kind of crazy to me. So you're double champion. Basically, you're double champion defending his second belt is only getting paid $100,000. Like, so yeah, that's kind of crazy to me. I feel like the UFC definitely pays more for their champions than Bellator does. But Holloway, I don't know.
I think that's one thing, man, you got to talk about maybe on our next show is the finances of the UFC. It's because they don't make enough money, Keys, in my opinion, man. And you just basically outlined that talking about Holloway. $100,000, bro, and he was going up a weight division on 8 days. I mean, that was the Khabib fight. He was going to fight Khabib, but still, he a champion going up a division, fighting the number one contender, basically in that division, and he made $100,000, dog.
Well, I think they're saying $100,000 for the when he fought Brian Ortega.
That was a championship.
But he made
fight,
a lot.
That's even worse.
Yeah, it is. It is. No, it's still not good. I'm just saying that. But there's different numbers out there for the Brian Ortega fight. I'm really confused about what he got for this. I know they said $350,000 for his fight with Poirier, $350,000, which I feel like is a good sum of money for that. That's a fair. I mean, yeah, I think they should be getting paid even more, but that I'm a lot happier with. But then $390,000 for his fight.
Man, a lot of okay. I think the lightweight division, there's big fights for Holloway, you know, in other places. And I don't know if defending his title versus these guys, you know, in the featherweight is going to pay him the most money. I just want to see him take the fights that are going to pay him more money, because clearly fighting Frankie Edgar was going to pay him a lot more money because the UFC was trying to get that fight, and then it failed like 3 or 4 times. So then the fans, the demand for the fight goes up. When the fans don't get the fight, the demand goes up. So people are pressing to see the fight. They're pressing the UFC to get the fight made. People are dying to see it more and more. Just almost gets there and then they don't get it. It's just like Khabib and Ferguson. Like, I feel like the Khabib and Ferguson is going to be so big. It's going to be bigger than it was before because people were almost right there every time. And then one of the guys slips on a banana peel during fight. they slip on a banana peel.
Yeah.
And that in the lightweight fights, there's big fights people want to see. They want to see Holloway in rematches. you know, that was a rematch with Poirier. People wanted to see that because both those guys have evolved. So there was demand for that fight, and they did it, and he got paid big. And then same thing with Edgar. The fight fell through, so there was more demand. The UFC knew fans wanted to see it. They paid him more. So there's bigger fights for him out there. There's some at featherweight, but probably more at lightweight. I think if he would have a Gaethje fight, it'd be huge. If he had a Ferguson fight, it'd be huge. Have a Conor McGregor rematch, it'd be huge. There's a lot of guys. He could Khabib fight would have been huge. You know, there's a lot of fights. But yeah, we'll have to talk about that on the next show. Some of the finances that are happening.
Yeah, we definitely got to do that. And that's why I think if Floyd comes in as a promoter, I think that would change what guys and girls get paid, because Floyd is all about making money. And when he looks at making money on the UFC side compared to making money on the boxing side, it'll be a turnoff for him. So, yeah, we can talk about that on the next show, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, this was great. We really had a great conversation. We went over time a little bit, but it does seem like the shows where we go over time, there's usually a good reason for it. Because we're really breaking something down and, you know, we're really getting into a topic. So I hope that's interesting on the other side of things for the listeners here. And it was a great show, and I was glad to kick it with you tonight.
I hope
everybody enjoyed the show.
No doubt. Talked about a lot tonight. Talked about Marcano moving up in weight. Talked about Jose Aldo possibly missing weight. Talked about cutting weight. You know, is it good or bad? Talked about Conor McGregor tonight. Talked about what his future, what's down the road for him. We talked about a lot tonight. You know, that's always good, you know, for our listeners. See that, you know, that we can actually talk this UFC thing and keep it in the flow. That being said, closing out for tonight, you know, Lee and Key signing off. And then always in closing for Mad Keys.
Hold on. One second. We got to just tell him one thing.
Go ahead.
Is next week, we'll be back next week for an important show, because Saturday is the UFC's end of the year event, which they always try to doll up, you know, as big as possible with the biggest names and grudge matches, the biggest fights. You know, last year they had John Jones, you know, rematching Gustafson, which was a really big fight. They had a Cyborg. Cyborg was fighting somebody. I don't remember who it was. But, yeah, they always have a big fight card end of the year, and that's where we have three title fights. Aldo's moving 135. I think Uriah Faber is fighting somebody too, so that's going to be a crazy card. Yeah, Faber's fighting Jan, so we got to get that show in. And, you know, I don't know yet whether it'll be Wednesday or Friday. We've been doing Wednesdays and Fridays, so if you check with us Wednesdays or Fridays, you know, those are our day, Wednesday and Friday. You know, Friday is good for this big event because you got the weigh-ins, and Wednesday is good because we can get in early predictions. Either way, we're going to get both. We're going to have predictions for UFC 245 next week, so keep in touch with us about that and stay tuned for that content. Everybody have a great night.
Actually, I think probably doing a show next Friday will probably be better, because that way we'll know who made weight, who didn't make weight, you know, whether or not anything has been canceled at the last minute. You know, we'll be on point, but we'll see how our schedules go. And, stay tuned.
Absolutely. Stay tuned for some great content next week, whether it be Wednesday or Friday. We'll get that figured out, and we'll be live. It'll probably be Friday. If Lee prefers Friday, we're probably going to do Friday. That's cool with me. So if so, we'll see you then. I always love Friday shows, so I'm sure it'll be a great one. Thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoyed. And Lee, the floor is yours.
All right, everybody, have a good day, good rest of the week. Today is hump day. Me and my man King showed up and showed out tonight. And then closing for my man Keys, for the audience.